Hello, my name is Avery Mitchell. I am 16 years old. Today is the 26th of May, 2018, and I am speaking with Tom Mann, who is my grandpa. And we are recording this interview in Aaron, Wisconsin, I think.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Okay, so then I just click this. Okay, so my first question is, what do you remember about the Kennedy assassination?
I was in bed because I skipped football practice because I didn't like playing football. Yeah. They wanted me to play football. But I pretended to be sick. And I'm in my bed listening to my clock radio. Which was really cool because I had a little dial.
Yeah.
And you could turn it for 16 minutes and it would, like a timer, it would run down and then it would turn on. And they said President Kennedy's been shot. And I was stunned. It was terrible. As a kid. What was that? 62?
Yeah, I think so.
Around there, 62. I was born in 48, 58, 14.
Okay.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
High school.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good story.
It was hard, you know, but my main interest in politics started when I heard Ronald Reagan speaking at the Cow Palace in San Francisco in behalf of Barry Goldwater, who's a very ultra-conservative kind of guy.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, because I'm very young, I thought it was fascinating. But I later learned that he was a movie star who did movies with monkeys and stuff.
Oh, it's over.
It's over. And they had the famous, the coverage of the Cow Palace convention, as I remember, I think it was a thing between Roosevelt, it was the mayor of New York.
That's on record now.
No, Rockefeller.
Oh.
And Governor Rockefeller and Barry Goldwater, who was conservative. And they had this guy, Gore Vidal, who was a liberal. And firing line guy. Buckley, William F. Buckley. And they're debating during this convention.
Yeah.
And ABC was in the tank. Nobody watched them. But all of a sudden, it's like what we have for TV now. Sensationalism. And they're like screaming at each other.
Yeah.
And Buckley called Vidal a fag on TV.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was pretty brutal.
And that's when you became interested in politics.
Yeah. Look, because I saw that they're both the same guys. They're both intellectuals from the East Coast. And
right.
They sound exactly the same. But I was a kid, you know, and there was something like that. It was from kind of a staid time, staid community.
Yeah. Okay. What's the next question? So, this is a little bit later. If Bobby Kennedy had lived, who would you have voted for in the 1968 election? That was for Nixon.
All right.
Actually campaigned for Eugene McCarthy,
who
was from Minnesota, and he was a poet. And we called him Clean Gene at the time. But I suppose realistically, Kennedy would have beaten him.
Yeah.
And then I would have voted for Kennedy.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have any like campaign buttons or anything from that? So how did you campaign for that?
Well, actually, it's an interesting story.
Yeah.
I was in an elevator at the Oregon newspaper. I think it was the day before Robert Kennedy got killed. He'd won the Oregon primary.
Yeah.
With him, I was a guy working in the receiving shipping department. Now I have my little basket of stuff. I'm taking pencils up to the reporters and stuff. And yeah, I think that he was in the elevator because your memory gets foggy.
Bobby Kennedy was in the elevator?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And I think he won the endorsement. He was going there for the endorsement of the editorial writers on the Oregonian. But then within 2 days, he was dead.
Yeah.
But I saw him speak on the street during that time. And he was very charismatic.
Yeah.
I think think he had a change of heart with Martin Luther King and all that stuff. So I don't think he was kind of your normal politician. But he made that famous speech in, I want to say it was Indianapolis, on the night Martin Luther King got killed, and he didn't have any guards or anything. He just went in the flatbed and said, I know what this is like. My brother got killed the same way. Yeah. I was moved by that.
Yeah, me too. I've seen that speech. It's really gorgeous.
Yeah. But his supporters went to George Wallace, who was kind of a racist white supremacist.
Right, he was
the governor
of Alabama. Yep, yep.
And they would ask people later, why did you switch? Why did you go from...
Happy birthday. It's great to see you.
It's great to see you too.
What did you guys get together?
Let's get stuff.
You just jumped down and said hi, bye.
So they asked after he died, they said, How can you be for George Wallace? And people would say the same thing. They said, well, they were both strong.
Yeah.
I think people like that. It doesn't really matter, you know, to a lot of people if what a person's policy is just that they're strong seeming.
Yeah.
A lot of I read a description of some politicians in our state. It's like a dumb guy's idea of a smart person.
Yeah, right. Seeing a little bit of a relapse of that now, maybe.
What's that?
We're seeing a little bit of a relapse of that now, maybe.
Right. Yeah, well, I don't say it because of the CIA.
Well, this is a Library of Congress. We got
protected by the court. It's interesting, you know, and it's just a human fallacy that we like things that are interesting.
Yeah.
And the real hard work is boring. You know, the problems we have and the policy issues we have are fairly boring things. Very complicated. I don't pretend to understand many of them. I read The Economist, you know, once a month. And Paul Krugman in the New York Times about economics. Because it still baffles me, you know, what they say about it.
Yeah.
All this stuff. The more you know, the less you know.
Yes. It's interesting. I like that. So then, next question, jumping a little bit forward again. What is your opinion on Richard Nixon, just generally?
Hated Richard Nixon. I was starting my earlier speech today, that my father, who was born in St. Brittany, I had no idea what his politics were, because back then, and you can see it in the old photographs, I got a photograph of my family, great-great-grandfather, I'm not sure which one it was, but they're all looking really either depressed or all the pictures back then are just like this is what life is. It really is hard.
Yeah.
And my father and mother came out of that era, World War II and stuff, and there's a rule. You don't talk about religion. It's personal. You don't talk about politics. It's personal. So I really had no idea as a kid growing up, because I was kind of in this fog all the time. I was watching Marx Brothers things on TV. And I became first aware when Kennedy got elected that I thought my parents were probably Republicans because they were almost crying. Nixon lost. And then when I went to college, I wrote a thing called 1819, Jesus Christ versus the State. It was during the Vietnam War, and I put Jesus on the stand and said, how can you not serve your country? This is a noble cause. And, you know, he's wearing sandals and he's got a beard. And it was just an easy setup, but it got such a, kind of a big, at least it seemed like an uproar at the time on the campuses I was at.
So you wrote this for your school?
School newspaper.
What school did you go to again?
Pacific University. This one actually was later at Portland State, but I was writing stuff all along.
Got it.
And I told that story tonight about the black guy in the street and everybody's walking by.
Yeah.
And I said it was to this reporter where I was working, you know, part time.
Right.
I said, well, it's just disgusting that people just ignore him. And he said, what did you do? And that was a moment of recognition for me. Because, you know, a young man, you're really, you think you know everything.
Yeah.
It's a fallacy.
Yeah.
But I kind of didn't. And, I was writing letters to myself in the paper saying I should be removed because I was a complete idiot, kind of thing. but that's kind of normal.
No,
she's doing a history report. She was. You can listen. It's fine. You can join in if you want.
Yeah, I can introduce you and add you to my interview. Do you want to?
Crazy lady with the beads.
Yeah, then you guys have a conversation. Do you want to join? But then.
So yeah, the very angry at Nixon. Spent a lot of time being ripped off.
Yes.
The things he was doing, but you know, because our kids, my age group was lives are on the line, and we knew they were just BSing about the war. And unfortunately, Kennedy had done the same thing, and Johnson had done the same thing, because of his ego. There's a new series on PBS about the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And it's, you knew that, but it's just shocking to hear it like 50 years later.
Right.
It's the, oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. They said very early on, it's a no-win situation, we should get out of here, but we don't know how. So we have to save face.
Yeah. So did you have to like avoid the draft, or were you in college at the time?
I was in college, but I lucked out. My deferment was up, and then Nixon, in his own genius, did a lottery for the draft. And I got a very high lottery point. I think by then Dylan was born, so I was I'd probably been exempt anyway.
Right. Did you have any friends that had to go?
Yeah, and died. Yeah. We have friends that die along the way. Lots of good friends die.
Right.
That's one of the things you do as you get older. And it's just part of life. You know,
So then did you participate in any of like the marches or anything like that?
Yeah, moratoriums and stuff. Oh, this one guy. I was just, and I was a young father, so I was working and I was going to school. I didn't have a lot of time, but I this guy named Arthur Earle, and I looked him up just recently. He was he ran for, I think, governor of Oregon. And I was working on his campaign. And he was like early on doing these like kind of futuristic satellites, teaching, very smart guy about, you know, the way the world should be. Very idealistic guy.
Yeah.
He's a sociologist, I think, as I remember. And so I worked for him. He came in third for governor behind a stripper. That was kind of disillusioning.
Yeah.
But that's when I kind of went, okay, my tastes aren't really the tastes of normal Americans.
Yep.
And it's proven to be pretty true all the way through. I mean, like the Trump thing, I've never seen a reality TV show.
Yeah.
I don't get why people are fascinated with this kind of narcissistic guy.
Yeah.
And that's not to say they're bad people or they don't know anything. It's just something that I would never, I mean, what? You ran a beauty pageant?
Yeah.
You know? That's his qualification. And he's borrowed a lot of money and went bankrupt several times. That's his qualification. But, you know, and about the same thing, popular music all the way along the line. It's always been, I've always felt a little fringy, which is fine.
Yeah.
Because they've let me exist. You haven't killed me yet.
Now you've been recorded by the CIA. They've got you now. I'm just joking.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then, who is your favorite president? Why?
I think, it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
I liked Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I fault him for, I think he was, as brilliant as he was, he wasn't a very good salesman. He was such a good speaker.
Yeah.
It seemed beneath him to go out there and sell his stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And explain it to people.
Right.
I mean, the fact that people hated Obamacare, but then when they realized what it was, they said, no, you can't get rid of this. This is my insurance.
Yeah.
Says something, you know.
Yeah.
I like Jimmy Carter, too. It's probably one of the most discredited presidents, but I thought his approach was right. He was concerned about energy way back. He seemed like kind of a humble guy. I don't know that he was. Who knows what these people are?
Right, yeah, it's like kind of a public face.
Mosquitoes. So
are they on my face?
No, no, I just feel a little itchy.
Yes.
Thing going on.
I am itchy as well. Okay. I don't want to take too much of your time, so I'll let you go back soon. I just, oh, this is a good one. Were you involved in the counterculture movement of the 1960s, and what did you think about it? Just like the music and the fashion and all those things.
I was working a sawmill out in Oregon by that time. And I was a little, well, it was attractive to me because it was about getting girlfriends and stuff. But
oh, I'm tired.
Hello.
Are you still interviewing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I found, and maybe I lucked out that way because living in the desert, though, oh, I had a country western and.
There's so many mosquitoes.
Yeah. Christmas mosquitoes. We usually don't have mosquitoes here.
That's bad.
Yeah. Wait, so why did you luck out?
Oh, well, we only had country western and odd things out there in the desert. And so I would just read like Rolling Stone or something. And if they said Loudon Wainwright's the best singer-songwriter, I would go to Portland, which is a couple hundred miles away, I'd buy that record.
Yeah.
And so my eclectic collection consisted of Loudon Wainwright and Tom Waits and Bonnie Raitt and, you know, critically acclaimed. And I was astounded that the rest of the world, when I got back to it, was kind of into the Rolling Stones and Pink Floyd, you know, these different things.
Right, had moved on sort of.
Well, I liked writing, you know, yeah. I always have. The John Prine didn't write, just, I like wit. And Randy Newman. I think that a lot of what people like is seriousness. I remember Loudon's, one of my favorite albums of his, getting totally panned, probably ruined his career, because it kind of made fun of rock and roll, with the idea of being a star. And that's what John Prine does too, he's just a normal guy.
Yeah.
And he's very good at being a normal guy.
Yeah.
And not pretending to be. And as you get older, you know, you listen to people singing about young, your age, people should sing about young girls in cars. But my age, you want to hear people sing about dental floss and trying to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
It's just real stuff, you know.
Right.
Life is funny. Life is interesting.
Yeah.
And good writing is good writing.
Yeah. Off of the good writing, I'm not sure this is too much of a jump, but I just want to go really, really quickly back to when you were talking about like writing in the paper for the university and like that specific article about the Vietnam War. Could you just talk a little bit more? I don't know like what it really like. What did you say and like what was the specific response?
Well, you know, I was raised, you know, Christian, but I wasn't that involved in it.
Right.
But when I got to college, I was questioning my belief in that system.
Yep.
And so to write a thing called Jesus Christ versus State, where you're putting your God on stand, calling him a homosexual and a deviant. And,
yeah.
I mean, it was just shocking. And people were like, and I was shocked myself.
Yeah.
But it was the way my reason was at the time. Because what did we really believe? Did we really believe in pacifism? Did we really believe in his teachings?
Right.
Which were good teachings.
Did you ever get any like specific responses from like, do you have any memories about like what happened when you published that?
Well, a few death threats.
Really?
Yeah, people were very angry.
Whoa.
I don't want to say death threats, but I wish I could kill you kind of thing.
Oh dear.
And I might be exaggerating it too.
Yeah.
But having family really quick really changed everything. And it really made me more real.
Yeah.
As real as I could get. No, but totally real. You can ask your mother about that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Okay, I'm going to only do a couple more. So then, like, you said that, like, Reagan kind of, like, piqued your interest in politics. Like, what do you think about, like, Reagan as a president and what he did?
I think looking back at things I've read, it was the start of the code words for otherness.
Wait, sorry, what was that?
Code words for otherness.
Oh.
It's a way of of getting a segment of the population to vote for you by saying racist things.
Yeah.
And it's very coded. It's not like, oh, I'm a racist. It's like what we're doing now with immigration. You know,
yeah.
That the Muslims are dancing on the rooftops. They were dancing on the rooftops. There was no evidence that they were dancing on the rooftops after 9/11. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they were doing that, you know, George H. Bush did that with Willie Horton, who was a black man who the governor pardoned that was running against him. And he raped somebody and killed somebody.
Yeah.
And it's just low-hanging fruit, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's become the norm in our culture. We like those punchy stories.
Yeah.
And in the 60s, I liked those punchy stories, too. But as I get older, I think, I've argued with my grandson about this, that just because it's interesting doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah.
So much of the internet is based on interest.
Yeah.
Where the real stories are, like, plumbing and how do you fix these roads? And we got plastic in our beer, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, those are the real stories. I don't care really how racist you are. Well, I do, but I'm white, so I'm pretty good. But yeah, I do care. I should say that's not a funny joke.
No, I understand what you mean, though.
Yeah.
Sensationalized headlines.
Yeah, and the real serious candidates aren't going to come forward in this climate.
Right.
Because they've got better things to do.
Yeah. I agree with
you. My opinion.
Yeah. Okay. What?
You are tired. You were a champ today. Thanks for coming.
Two more. Okay.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
I love you.
Yeah!
Oh, it was a great birthday.
Get out of here! Yeah! And now
you're thinking back on your whole life. Can I ask you one more question? I don't know. Okay, what is the most important thing that has ever happened to you?
Most important thing that ever happened to me.
Or some of the most important things, something that jumps out to you.
Well, I think having kids.
Yeah.
And I think finding happiness. I think when the kids and I moved to the East Side, I found a really happy balance. And I really wasn't ready for that. I didn't know how to do that.
Are you ready?
To be a parent.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
But we got along so well, and these guys were so great. And that changed my life, I think, forever. And I see it with you guys. I see how you respond to each other with great love. And I was doing that unconsciously. I mean, I wasn't going, oh, you should just love these guys. Everything's going to work out. But, you know, when Katie moved in, we'd hug in the hallways every time we saw each other.
Because I talked to her when I
was in a situation. But we were very happy.
Yeah, I saw that.
And warm.
Yeah.
And I always thought they were brilliant. They were.
Just really fun.
They were. They were very. I look at you guys too. You're as smart as smart than me.
I know.
Yeah, no, it's kind of like compliments on yourself. We are your genes.
Well, it's just neat. It's neat to see these abilities.
It's very warm earlier.
Yeah.
That's sweet. Okay. Okay. This will be one of my last, probably my last. How did you experience the civil rights movement and like what were your views on? I know we kind of like touched on it, but just like when you were seeing things from like Selma and like on the TV and stuff, like do you have any memories of that?
She's finishing up her interview.
When I was early in high school, I think my consciousness, we didn't have black people in our town.
Right.
The one thing I remember was though, I was a St. Louis Cardinal fan. You know, with baseball, I made that reference tonight about those Polish players on that Pittsburgh team.
Yeah.
And I found that was my cosmos. So The St. Louis Cardinals in 57 or 58 had two outstanding black girls, a guy named Bob Gibson and a guy named Kurt Flood. Bob Gibson became the best pitcher in baseball, and Kurt Flood became the best fielder. They were black players. The manager couldn't tell them apart. So he'd send Gibson out to play center field.
Okay, Betty.
And they weren't allowed to have their uniforms washed with the white players. And one time it was done accidentally, and there was near a riot in the clubhouse. There's a book by David Halberstam about that year. And they later turned out to be good guys and understanding and moved on from there.
Sure.
But that was in the 60s. That was when I was a teenager. But that kind of stuff was happening, too. Anyway, that's just sports teams. What's going on behind there?
So you weren't really tuned into that at all, though? Like the
not on a personal level, because I didn't know any, except watching ball games. When I watched a ball game, it was the first time I ever seen a black person.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's like a microcosm. Like you were seeing it different. Okay. Now that my mom's gone, I'm just going to do like one more. Should Nixon have been pardoned? Do you think he should have gone to trial?
Well, I think at the time, I think he did what's right for the country.
Okay.
I think he was a pretty awful human being.
Yeah.
But he was still a human being.
Right.
I think he did the right thing. I think the country did the right thing at the time.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. What is the piece of technology that has most changed your life? It doesn't necessarily have to be like electric technology, just like some innovation.
The Walkman.
Yeah.
That I get to walk around with music. I just love that. That was exceptional. And mixtapes, I don't think. I just loved listening to that stuff hour after hour, walking where I was.
And this one isn't even on the cards, but Grace was talking about earlier, and I'm just curious. Can you tell me about your work when my mom was like younger, like when you worked at the factory? Like I think that one of your coworkers was around.
Don.
Yeah, Don. Grace said it was like a little office, like The Office, like the TV show.
Yeah. Well, there's just three of us, and we're there on third shift. And giant place. So we're moving thousands of pounds of grain all over the place, and we're loading these cars. Very dangerous work, but moving railroad cars and loading stuff. But again, we're our own bosses, so I'm listening to headphones, Walkmans.
Yep.
And riding my bike to work was 9 miles, I suppose, all year long. And you get there and you got your locker, you throw clothes in. You knock off your work as fast as you could. You take a nap, and then the boss gets there. And it was lovely. And we had a beer machine.
Oh, nice.
Heavy machinery and beer machine.
Oh.
And the day shifts, those guys were wacky. I mean, it was funny. They were characters all day. And you can have that job, and you can have a physical job. And looking back on it, I just loved it. And I think that's a man thing. It's kind of a natural thing to do. It's a problem we have where everybody sits behind a desk.
Yeah.
I felt a little bad about it because I thought, my parents certainly expected more from me.
Sure.
But the wages were good at the time. I was making $13 an hour.
You're having a good time with your beer machine?
Having a good time, all the overtime I wanted.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't, it wasn't that out of line with the beer machine, but it was just nice.
Yeah.
It was funny.
Yeah.
These old drawing guys, these characters, everybody had a nickname.
You should write a book about it.
Yeah. Well, I read portions about that a little bit.
Yeah. I'd like to read those. It sounds funny.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Okay, Annie, I hope the CIA doesn't come and pick me up tomorrow.
Yeah, I hope not either. Thank you so much for doing this.
I love you, Avery.
I love you too. I'm
so impressed by you.
Thank you. I'm impressed by you. I know those people. I hope you enjoyed it, talking and thinking.
It did.
All right, that's it.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. Are you
didn't
sure?
Didn't even do the Masurowski.